Welcome to Line of Sight, a new podcast from Santa Clara University.
My name is Don Heider. I'm the Executive Director of the Markelis Center for Applied Ethics.
And I'm Thane Kreiner, Executive Director of Miller Center for Social Entrepreneurship.
The Markelis Center helps people learn about how ethics work and how to make ethics a part of their life through making better ethical decisions.
And Miller Center accelerates entrepreneurship to end global poverty and protect the planet.
So Thane, what are we here for?
Well, we're starting this new podcast, which we're calling Line of Sight. And the idea is to provide our listeners, of which we hope there'll be many, a line of sight to social justice. And the lines of sight that we each have to offer through our work accompanying social entrepreneurs and through your work helping people understand and apply applied ethics frameworks, I think are pretty unique. And we're going to bring in some very interesting guests in upcoming episodes, too, to bring their own perspectives on things like gender equality, racism in the United States and globally.
And I think we're uniquely positioned here in Silicon Valley because there's so much going on here. There's a lot of energy, a lot of ideas, a lot of smart people working, but not always to the benefit of humanity. And so I think we have the opportunity to get in a conversation to talk about how companies might work smarter and better if they had the world in mind and ethics in mind as well.
Well, Don, I think here at Santa Clara University, we have a really unique perspective to offer the world. We're the oldest university in California, founded by the Jesuits, who many would say are social entrepreneurs because they established a system of higher education in the 16th century in Europe. And entrepreneurship, of course, is the fundamental ethos of Silicon Valley, but how technologies are used to benefit or sometimes harm people requires a lot of what we would call discernment in the Ignatian language. So my hopes are that by having conversations with each other and some of the guests we're going to invite on to this podcast, we'll be able to give people a line of sight to ways that entrepreneurship and ethics can inform social justice here in Silicon Valley and also around the world. How about you?
Well, what's fascinating to me about doing this and even having these centers that we have, the Miller Center and the Markelis Center, is I really love this idea of sort of timeless values that the Jesuits have in terms of, like you say, discernment. They're very interested in education, asking tough questions,
right,
turning things over, exploring, but also ethics. They're grounded in this idea of moral reasoning. And so taking those timeless values and then sort of applying that framework to this new technology where we have all these companies doing these crazy, interesting, innovative things, to me, that's an interesting intersection.
Right.
And so often the ethos in the Valley and in technology has been build it and release it and then see what happens.
Right.
And we would sort of, I'd say, endorse a different approach, which would be we need to be thoughtful about what we're doing to humanity, to our country, to the world in terms of these technologies.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things when we talk about innovation and entrepreneurship that we see really celebrated in Silicon Valley is all the unicorns, these companies that have gone to ideas to a $1 billion valuation in a really short period of time. And I often wonder, you know, how did the founders think about how people would benefit from their innovation and ideas? And did they even think about that? And if not, why not? So when we talk about social entrepreneurship, a lot of people say, how is that different than regular entrepreneurship? And it's because social justice comes first. It's the first part of it, just like impact is the first part of impact investing. One of the questions I think about a lot in the middle of the night is, why isn't all entrepreneurship social entrepreneurship? Why would you start a company that's not doing something good for people or the planet?
Exactly. I mean, and I'm of a similar mindset in that, you know, we're really convinced that the way to run a business is to be an ethical business. That's going to be the long-term benefit to human beings. You can get short gain by being unethical and doing things that aren't good for people, but I don't think you're going to last in the long run. And so we spend a lot of time trying to convince companies about the benefits of ethical thinking, ethical design as they do these startups.
Yeah. So as you know, it was Mark Lowe Center for Applied Ethics, the center of distinction that you lead, that actually attracted me to Santa Clara University. And let's talk a little bit about Mark Lowe Center and what it does, because I don't think there's any other ethics center anywhere in the world that does the kind of work that Mark Lowe Center does in creating frameworks for people to make ethical decisions when they encounter unavoidable ethical dilemmas, which all of us do.
Exactly. Well, we really want people to get excited about ethics and see it as a process, not as a set of answers, for instance, or a set of laws, something you have to comply with. The framework we teach helps people sort of think about sort of five classic ideas in ethics and apply those in a very practical, applied way to any situation that can help leaders or really anybody make a better decision about any kind of dilemma they face. And often ethics comes up when you have what we call sort of competing moral claims. In other words, there's several different perspectives that might be correct and you're trying to weigh and see which way to go. And we feel like the framework we've developed over the years can help people make better decisions ultimately.
Right. So I think a good example of that, and one of the things that I recall from my early engagement with Mark Lowe Center was way back around 2001 when I was working for a company called Affymetrix that was a pioneer in gene chip technology. And what we were doing at the time is using semiconductor manufacturing techniques to package genetic information onto a silicon chip. And we very quickly got to the point that we could put essentially the entire human genome on a chip the size of your thumbnail. And that has profound ethical implications. Who owns that information? What can be done with it? What is our responsibility as a corporation? Or, you know, is it one of these things from, well, we're just making the product, and what happens with the product is somebody else's problem, which seems to come up a lot in public discourse. And I think I was really fortunate to be in a company where the CEO and some of the board members, including a Nobel Prize winner, who had been one of the conveners of the Asilomar conference back in the 1970s when recombinant DNA was really coming to the fore as a new technology, said, we should have an ethics advisory committee, and why don't you lead it, Thane? Well, that sounds fun. So I got excited about ethics early on because I got to work with really, really smart people who are dealing with really challenging problems. And the company ended up, partly because of my work and the work of the rest of the team, using the discussions around ethics to inform our public policy positions. So to me, that's a concrete example of how having an ethics framework and actually having conversations about ethics can influence the direction that the company takes in the long term. And that's something that I think, again, I haven't seen any other ethics center that's doing work like Mark Lowe Center. There's a lot of other ethicists who will opine on whether something's ethical or not ethical, but that's a lot different than the individual being empowered to make her or his own decisions based on a framework and communicate that to other people to shift the direction of an organization. And I think that's something that we can offer Silicon Valley in a day and age where we have deeper and deeper economic divides in the United States and the rest of the world, in part because of these technological innovations.
Yeah, sometimes reporters, we get a lot of journalists calling us, and sometimes they get frustrated because we don't have an easy answer, or we won't give them an easy answer. What we want to do is help people think for themselves, and that's often not, you know, easily communicated in 10 seconds.
Yeah. So what attracted you to Santa Clara University? Because you're, at least compared to me, you're kind of the new kid on the block.
Well, what attracted me was this idea to come in and help run an ethics center. I started my career in journalism, and I was a news photographer first at a TV station. And from the very moment you put a TV camera on your shoulder and go outside the building, you're faced with a lot of ethical decisions. You know, I remember one of my very first stories was a fatal accident, and just thinking about what am I going to shoot? What do I not shoot? And then after I shoot all that, what am I going to show the public? And how am I going to treat the person who died in this accident with dignity and yet still tell the story in a way so people understood what happened here? I can still tell the story effectively. So almost the very first day on the job, I was faced with ethical decisions. And so that's really carried me through my career. When I got out of journalism, started teaching journalism, I made ethics a part of every course I taught. And then in my previous institution, I was able to start a small center for digital ethics. And I did that because I'd been doing research on online communities. And one of the online communities I was doing some research in, sort of as a virtual ethnographer, you know, living virtually in this community, there was a large ethical breach by a member of the community. And that wasn't so surprising. But what was surprising is, as I talked to different people in the community, there was no one opinion about what should be done about this community member. Some people said, it's the internet. You know, you get what you get. Nothing should be done. Others said they should be banned from the community. But there was no uniform opinion about it. And I thought, wow, this is a great ethical dilemma. And even in the virtual world, we're facing these new and interesting dilemmas that there's no prescribed way of figuring out.
Right. You said even in, but I sort of question, is that especially in the digital world with the potential for deep fakes and things like that, and the notion of something that's, you know, embedded, as we heard from Greta Thunberg the other day at the UN General Assembly, that, you know, the facts are in around climate change, which is one of the things we think a lot about at Miller Center, because it affects the poor a lot more than the people who are creating it. And there's still people claiming that climate change is quote, fake news. And this gets propagated really, really quickly in digital journalism. So how do we know what's real and what's not real anymore?
Well, and I think that's a great question. So how do we discern what's true and what isn't?
Right. Coming back to sort of the Ignatian philosophy of discernment. Right?
Absolutely. And then even more so, we've spent a lot of time about how would you talk to people who might not be interested in factual information? You know, what's that method of persuasion? And how do you get them to think ethically about framing this information?
Yeah.
I think
that's a hard one.
It's difficult. I mean, we've actually had folks in our center sort of looking at, you know, how people make decisions, what's the emotional base for it, what's the rational base? Because again, if we want people to think ethically, we want to help them be able to sort of step back from a news item, for instance, and make some kind of meaningful discernment about it.
Right.
And so if they're not interested in strictly facts, because there's lots of fact-checking services out there, but they don't seem to be getting much traction these days. And so if that approach isn't working, you know, what would be an approach that might get to people, might really affect them? I mean, one of the things that's so attractive to me about this job and also about what Miller Center does is we're thinking deep thoughts, but we're trying to figure out how it affects the world, how it affects human beings every day and where they live.
Right.
I think that's very different than other centers I've experienced at other universities. And it's also what got me excited about coming here, probably you as well.
Yeah, so that sort of connects to this Ignatian spiritual notion of contemplatives in action, that we're thinking deeply about real problems that are afflicting the poor and the planet, but we're also taking practical action to try and drive social justice. And that's, you know, exactly what Miller Center has been about since 2003, when we did our first accelerator program, is noticing that a lot of innovations meant to address at the time the Millennium Development Goals, this was 2003, were not getting to significant scale relative to the sizes of the problems afflicting the global poor. And yet these innovations and the innovators were celebrated, you know, on stage at different black tie events. It's like, isn't this great that we've got, you know, a silver impregnated rice husk water filter that only costs $3 to manufacture, and everybody in the world can have one? Well, the technology alone doesn't create social justice, right? Mm-hmm. You need to have enterprises behind it, and you need to have a business model that actually makes it possible for the people who are going to benefit from the impact of these innovations to get value from that that's greater from than what they're paying for it, if they're paying for it at all. So we look back at things like this water filter 3 years later, and 5,000 people have it. And you know, there's 1.1 billion people on the planet who don't have safe drinking water. So the question that the founders of GSBI, our Global Social Benefit Institute, ask is, could we connect the Silicon Valley entrepreneurial ethos to these innovators who had an idea to benefit the poor, aligned with the Millennium Development Goals, now the Sustainable Development Goals, and accompany them, which is another philosophy in Ignatian spirituality, walking with the other person as a trusted advisor or kind of spiritual director in the spiritual exercises, to help them discern a path to scale the impact of their innovation. And that model worked. I mean, the model worked, and you know, we've now accompanied more than 1,000 social enterprises with Silicon Valley executives who are mentoring them. And it's not that the mentors know the answer for what's going to work in Nepal or Nigeria or Nicaragua or Nairobi. It's that they've taken ideas and built them to scale, and so that they can help the entrepreneurs ask the right questions. And that's where I see a really interesting parallel in our work, right? Is that we have a framework for taking innovations to scale through social entrepreneurship, and you have a framework for applied ethics, but none of us know the answers. We're empowering the people who are doing the work, whether it's people working in corporations that are making great technological breakthroughs, or whether it's social entrepreneurs trying to provide clean energy or sustainable agriculture or education in sub-Saharan Africa. We're providing them the tools to discern a path forward. And to me, that's what's really powerful and unique about Santa Clara. And it is what is attracted me here to Santa Clara University, was the idea of helping these entrepreneurs discern their own path to scale impact.
Having a model, having a framework, I think is really helpful. I mean, when I came here, I know about journalism ethics and I know about technology ethics, but our center goes across 9 different areas. But what I've learned is that framework really scales for us across all those 9 disciplines.
Right.
And so we always start by teaching the framework. You know, and yeah. Then we can get into particular questions in bioethics or particular questions in government ethics.
Yeah.
But that framework is the really fundamental to everything we do.
Yeah, that's interesting, because we see the same thing with social enterprises, that we've worked with social enterprises aligned with that at least 10 of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals: end poverty, no hunger, health, clean water, sanitation, electricity, gender equality, all of these things. And the framework that we're using is beneficial to all of those entrepreneurs. Now, over the years, we've gained a lot more expertise in certain sectors, just as you have, business ethics, for example. And some of that has been intentional, and some of the intention is driven by thinking about what will have the greatest impact in creating social justice. So when we think about problems of poverty, you know, somewhere around 4 billion people on the planet are living in poverty by definitions of their own countries, 46 million here in the United States alone, and that number is growing, especially with this broadening technological divide. But where we see a real connection is between the impacts of climate change on the poor, which the most impacted people by climate change are the poorest people in the world, because they're living in areas where they rely on the ecosystem for their energy, their food, and their water. And those ecosystem services are heavily impacted by climate change in equatorial regions, which is where most of the poor people on the planet live. And yet, from an ethical point of view, those people are least responsible for climate change, because the greenhouse gas emissions that are driving global warming are mostly from the global north, from United States, China, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, to a lesser extent, India. And the people who are suffering did not contribute to that. And yet they're bearing what Pope Francis calls this huge burden, which imposes, in his words, an ecological debt on the global north. You take it a step further, and I think hopefully we'll have some guests in the future talking about women's economic empowerment and gender equity. Who is responsible for the food, the water, the energy, as well as the health and education of their families in most of the world? It's women. And so they're bearing the brunt of climate change and poverty in most of the world. So we really see women's economic empowerment as a vital approach to ending poverty and creating resilience to climate change in poor communities. A way to create social justice is by working with women.
Well, and to me, it's ironic that the people who are in power often, people who lead government and industry, are the least willing to sort of take on the ethical challenges that global climate change posed to them.
Right, right. Are there ethics in government these days?
Yeah, it's a good question. And or those people who do want change aren't in a particular position to bring about that change. I think it's going to change, though. I mean, I think we see enough young people who are gravely concerned that there's going to be a push towards change. I mean, what we see is, you know, honestly, 2 years ago, very few tech companies were interested in ethics. And we've seen that change. We've been invited into a number of tech companies to help do training and help folks learn the framework. And I think that number is going to grow. And I think it's because of pressure from fines from the EU. I think it's the threat of regulation that's coming. But I also think their own employees are asking a lot of difficult questions and sort of rising up and demanding more accountability. And I think when they interview young people, a lot of them are asking, what's your ethical stance?
That's right. I think that's exactly right. And I think, again, that's a way that Santa Clara is unique, that by working with young people who are committed to social justice and giving them the tools for an ethical decision-making framework, and even empowering them by engaging them directly with social enterprises in the developing world so they understand the problems of poverty at a very visceral level. If they're at the table when there's a conversation about supply chain transparency, they can ask, do we know that the cobalt in your iPhone and your iPad and your computer did not involve women or children in forced labor? Do we know that? And how do we know that? And we've got the technologies now to have supply chain transparency all around the world. What we need to do is offer alternative, dignified livelihoods to people working in the communities that are bringing out these rare earth elements that drive a lot of the technological change happening in Silicon Valley. And I will say that we are very honored to be working with companies that are thinking that way. And I think it is in part because their employees, who are the young people, are demanding it. They're demanding a different world where there is social justice, where the climate is not changing because of the ways that humans are adding greenhouse gases, and where all people are treated equally, regardless of their gender, their color, their sexual orientation, or anything else.
And we found a good reception at these companies we've got into, that when you get to the folks that are there working, they have a moral compass. They want to do the right thing. But oftentimes, I'd say in the last few years, they haven't been given voice.
So what kind of guests do you want to have on our podcast, Don?
I want to talk to people who are thought leaders, who have interesting ideas, who are doing interesting things, sometimes controversial. I'd also like to talk to every CEO of every tech company in the Valley. I don't know if that's possible, but I sure would like to get in front of them and ask them a lot of interesting and difficult questions.
Yes. So entrepreneurs and innovators, for sure. But it would also be really fun to have people on the podcast who are experts in some of the large social problems that we are facing in the United States and globally, racism, sexism, discrimination based on other human qualities, the technological divide and how that's impacting people globally if they don't have access to technologies, and the deepening economic rift here in the United States.
So our hope is that your line of sight into the issues that we tackle in this podcast will be better after listening to each program.
And we thank you very much for joining us and hope that you will be back again to get a clearer line of sight to social justice.